We can call this meeting to order. I will start roll call. Anderson?
Here.
Bork?
Here.
Gade here. Grimm? Harrelson?
Here.
Krylov?
Here.
Murray?
Here.
Shetty?
Here.
Silliman? Smith?
Here.
And Traer?
Here.
All right, great. And staff members present?
Sarah Gardner present.
All right, great. And then next we'll look at approval of the minutes of October 6th, 2025. All in favor?
Aye.
Any changes? Aye. Yes. Okay. All right, a motion to approve. I'm sorry.
That's what I thought. Yeah, motion to approve.
Motion, okay, great.
Second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
All right, motion passes. All right, so first item on the agenda today, action items from the last meeting. Staff will complete, transportation scores and the matrix.
Yeah, which you will have found in your packet for today. So we'll be touching on those later in the meeting. We also want to take this opportunity to introduce a new member of the Climate Action staff. As some of you may be aware, Megan Hill took another position in the city back in August, and we were excited for her to have that opportunity. She's over at Parks and Rec, which is a great growth opportunity from her. She actually had started out her work at the city with Parks and Rec, so they were very excited to get her back and her many talents, and that then opened up a position in our office that we've been working very hard to fill. And on her very first day today, we have Kendall McMullen joining us. So I'll let Kendall come up to the podium and just introduce herself briefly.
Hi, everyone. My name is Kendall. Like Sarah said, this is my first day, but I'm very excited to be stepping into the role of engagement specialist with our division. I recently finished my master's at Loyola Chicago this past May. I studied environmental law and policy.
Awesome.
Oh, welcome.
Welcome.
Oh, welcome.
All right. And then for events, we don't have any. We have a busy September and October. We are doing, staff are speaking at some other events that are happening throughout the month, but we're not putting in any ourselves. Does anybody have a community event that they are aware of or participating in that they would like to highlight for the group? Sounds like it's Thanksgiving. All right.
All right, so we'll move on to old business, the Resilience Hub pilot project update from the Iowa City Bike Library.
So we have Audrey Wiedemeyer joining us. Audrey is going to talk a little about the first phase of implementation for the Resilience Hub pilot project. As you may recall, the way our program is set up, we have 1 year of funding that goes to planning activities to come up with a plan. And then year two and year three, we provide funding to help implement those plans. The bike library has completed its first year of implementation funding activities and are getting ready to go into the second year. But as a requirement of our grant agreement, they have to come and give us a little update, which she's going to do today. And then if you all feel good about what you're hearing, we'll execute a contract with the bike library to then implement the second round of funding for them.
How much time do I have?
As much as you'd like.
Okay.
Or as little.
5:30.
Or as little.
Okay. Welcome to the crew, Kendall. I'm Audrey. Nice to meet you. And looking forward to working with you on some things. Did everybody get a copy of our zine that we produced?
No.
Okay.
That would have been...
Raise your hand if you haven't seen the Bike Library zine. Okay. Robert, Emma, Michael, Wim. So everybody. Except for you two.
Yeah.
I'm Googling it right now.
Oh, you have them? Yeah.
Diane's going to go fetch a copy for us.
Yeah, and you can look at them afterwards or whatever. But that was kind of part of the first phase, is just planning for what we were going to do with this funding and then how we were going to talk about it and communicate what a resiliency hub is to everybody that comes in our door and also the larger public. And that zine that we did with Public Space One was really fun. We had about 15 volunteers help us produce it. And we did it in Spanish and English, because we do have a lot of people that we serve who speak Spanish. And we did that earlier in 2025. Since then, we have replaced our roof in preparation for solar. So we worked with Martinez Roofing on that. And Advanced Electric is our neighbor across the street, and they've always been really good to us. And so we decided to use them as our contractor for the electrical upgrade. We are, like, our hope from the beginning of this was to showcase what a retro, like a warehouse retrofit could look like, and do it in the vein of creating a resiliency hub at the end. So working with these contractors, they have been very involved community members as well in kind of like the creation of this retrofit. So that's been a lot of fun and not something we expected. They're also now, as we round out the campaign, a lot of these contractors are coming back and making personal contributions to the capital campaign, which this funding is helping to support as well. So that's been really wonderful to see, that they have been able to make a connection with our shop through the work that we've done, but then also continuing to grow our network through their networks. Another thing we did this year was we installed 80 solar panels, and we were working with Tim Dwight on that. Everything is ready to get plugged in. We have been granted a special exception from the city of Iowa City to reduce our parking spaces down to 2 out front and redo the concrete and beautify the front area of the bike library. If you're familiar with the location, that kind of out in front of our area could definitely use some beautification. But we do have a lot of people coming through between the South District and downtown using social services. And it's also a bike thoroughfare to get off Gilbert. And so being able to make that like more appealing is what we're going to be doing with our concrete overhaul. It's a lot of broken up asphalt now. When it's done, it's going to be very clear, like, parking spots and donation drop-off zones. And so just working to beautify that. So when we do the concrete, which we hope to do in the next month, if it doesn't get too cold, we're also going to be putting in ballards to in front of our new electrical boxes that are outside. And that is the one thing that we have to get done before we plug in our solar panels. So we've been running heat and AC off of gas. But as soon as we get those ballards in, hopefully Central Concrete, we can get them scheduled in the next month on a warm day and knock that work out and plug the solar panels in, which would be really exciting. Mm-hmm. Another thing we did this summer was we got a grant for $4,000, and then a private donor donated $5,000 for a mural on our building. It is a native Iowa water flora and fauna landscape. And so this serves as like an educational piece for water quality. That is going to be paired with a rainwater harvested bike wash. Think about a 3,000 liter rain barrel. It's not going to be as big as the one outside of Big Grove, but it will be a showcase piece to help people understand how we can, you know, use water that is harvested off our roofs. And then we'll have educational signage on there and then on the mural itself talking about water quality, because that's something ever since we got the building we've always wanted to do, because there's a lot of concrete down in that neighborhood and there's a lot of runoff that goes into the Iowa River. We weren't able to put in a bioswale like we wanted, but we think this is a really good next best option. And a fun thing about the rainwater harvested bike wash is that we are working with the College of Engineering with their senior students on a 2-semester project. They're designing the bike wash this semester, and then they'll be building it next semester. And we really would love to get a bike that we can set up on. We need good pressure to wash bikes. It reduces the amount of solvents that we use to clean bikes. And so if we can get a higher pressure, then we don't have to use as much solvent or any at all. So water pressure is a big factor when we're, you know, designing this system. And one thing that we could do is potentially have a bike that you can mount to the system and you generate the electricity by pedaling the bike. And this is a pretty intricate detail, and we don't know if it's going to happen, but we're really pushing for it. And then that will act as like another educational opportunity for people to understand like how we can generate our own power, mm-hmm. and then how we can use it effectively. So that should be done by May. When we do the concrete, when we redo the concrete out front, we'll also be installing covered bike parking. So it's a 16 by 18 covered bike parking area, which we need more of everywhere. One thing that we get asked a lot by our local businesses and partners is, do you have any bike racks that you can sell us? And I've squirreled away lots of bike racks over the years, like the big commercial industrial size ones that we've just gotten here and there. And we've given them away to various partner organizations. But we have run out, and we have enough to put up some new bike parking for us. But we just need more bike parking in general. And so one thing we're going to be considering is how we can help other nonprofits and local businesses who are our partners to secure affordable bike parking, because bike parking is actually really expensive, like thousands of dollars for one or two big pieces of metal. So we have done quite a few things this year with the funding, with the $50,000, and then also with other donations and grants and with our own money towards building this resiliency hub. Things that we're going to be doing in 2026, which we can look forward to doing together, is finishing that bike wash, creating seeding and raised beds with native plants in it to beautify the area and kind of cool it down since there's a lot of concrete, installing shade sails, installing that covered bike parking, and we are working on a design for a sculpture, an archway that will go in the very front of our building that will kind of beautify the area, like let people know, like, this is where the hub is. It'll be very obvious. We've invested a lot of money into insulation and the roof and the top of the building and the inside of the building and the courtyard area, but you can't necessarily see that from the street. And so we want to make sure that when people go by, that they know this is a resiliency hub. And so we're working on a design with a local artist, Drew Evans in Marion, and he builds bike sculptures, or he builds sculptures out of recycled bike parts. So we're hoping that by late spring, early summer, we'll be able to do a grand reopening, and a lot of these next Resiliency Hub pieces are going to be either in place or almost done. And that is my update. Do you have any questions?
Did you have anything to do with the installation in South Park, or the lower park, City Park? There's a bike tool delivery place, and there are two racks, two places where you can lock bikes, but it's the bike tool installation that strikes me as unusual, and it's been done in the last couple of months, right, where they've done other work down there. Maybe Sarah knows, but I just thought this is about bikes.
No, we have one of those out in front of our building, but we're not involved in that.
The city installed that fix-it station.
Mm-hmm. I wondered who did it. All right. Thank you.
Yep.
I have no question, but it's just really awesome to hear the update and everything that's going on. It's really cool to see all the just advancements and just making it a hub, a resiliency hub. So very exciting. And I've seen the mural mostly on social media. I haven't seen it in person, but it's really cool.
Thanks, Jamie.
I have a question.
Yeah.
You mentioned the native flora and fauna in the new mural. Mm-hmm. Where does the winged cat fit into that?
That was the art. Well, it's an Iowa bobcat. And then it has the monarch wings. Mm-hmm. And then this was the artist's depiction of like the Pachamama or like the Mother Earth, like in all of, you know, the queen of all of the flora and fauna. That was her depiction of it. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, that's fun. I'm glad I asked.
But we will be putting together a coloring book because, like, then, and this will be part of the Resiliency Hub kind of, like, information station that we're putting together in the shop. We have a lot of kids that come in. And so having a coloring book of the mural that helps them identify the different plants and animals on the mural, and then they can color them in.
Well, I'll just add briefly from a staff perspective, the Bike Library has been a fantastic Resilience Hub partner. Obviously, they're doing really exciting and great work. When they hosted us for the Resilience Hub hang for the Climate Fest, we had lots of people coming through that we have not connected with previously, mm-hmm. which is one of our goals with Resilience Hub activities. So we're very enthusiastic about all the work they're doing. And the contract that we're proposing to execute for the remaining $50,000 set aside for their projects would help fund finishing up the electrical infrastructure necessary to bring the solar installation online, as well as shade structures and planters containing those native plants. If you all are agreeable with that, we will go forward in executing that contract, and then we will look forward to bringing Audrey back one last time to give us a final update on all these projects once the remaining funding is spent. Are there any objections to doing so? All right. Well, thank you so much for coming and bringing us that update, Audrey.
Thank you. And we'll be in touch about the grand reopening because that might be a great way for us to connect with the Climate Action Commission through that event.
That would be fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Sorry, I lost my place here on the agenda. Alrighty, so we are looking now at prioritization scoring of the Climate Action Plan.
Yeah. So the next thing we want to take a look at is, as promised, we compiled the scores you all submitted after the last meeting as to the transportation items. And you can see we had three rise to our top tier items. Those include implementing recommendations from the completed electric vehicle readiness plan, requiring climate change analysis for new subdivisions and rezonings. I do want to put a little pin there and circle back to that one with a question. And then complete the transit study and implement recommendations to bolster service and increase ridership. two questions for you. One is, my assumption is the reason the climate change considerations in subdivisions and rezoning scored so highly is because of the recent activity around the comprehensive plan. Just going off of notes from that I saw and the scores turned in, is that an accurate assessment? Okay. Based on that, do you think it makes sense to reword that item to include climate change considerations in the comprehensive plan update and implement in new subdivisions and rezonings? So we're talking about it flowing from the comprehensive plan. Part of the reason I want to reword it is, as you know, that has been our mystery action item for the last several years. And so I want to leave the trail of breadcrumbs for whoever comes after us to know what we meant by that.
This is TR2, right?
TR2, yes.
It makes sense to me reading it, yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll make that plan. Are
there any other, would we create a new subdivision that didn't somehow flow from the comprehensive plan?
No. Then, they would always flow from the comprehensive plan. So this just clarifies that a little, you know, and I think what it does more specifically will help clarify that we want them to take the climate change considerations that end up in the comprehensive plan and apply those to the analysis of new subdivisions, which hopefully we'll have some. We desperately need the housing.
Yeah.
So it'll be good. The other question I had for you then is on a tier item in the tier two priorities, which just really is about, it's TCP1, which says establish an electric and fuel efficient vehicle purchasing policy. Given our discussions last time about that having been established, I'm suggesting we put advance the electric fuel efficient vehicle policy. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's me. Yeah.
Does this feel like a satisfactory breakdown of, does anybody see any surprises in there, or does this feel about where the priorities should be? Okay. So we'll leave those as the top priority items then. And then we will take a look at the objectives and targets that flow from that. As you'll recall, last time we talked about potential target actions related to buildings, and we decided to bring buildings and transportation back together so we could pick one from each in some awareness of what was going for the other. I actually have one exciting thing to report, and that's last time you'll remember, perhaps you'll remember, last month we talked about one of the potential targets being to achieve a 40% percentage of new homes receiving HERS ratings in the city. And actually what we had put that at was 20%. And so one thing I did between that meeting and this one was go and see what is the participation in our HERS rating program currently. And I'm so excited. We're actually sitting at 36%, which means like one out of three homes built in Iowa City in this year has gotten a HERS rating of 52 or better, which is fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I put 40 in here as a number that's roughly higher than that to continue growing it. Mm-hmm. We are not married to that number. If this is the target you want to pick for this item, we could try to nudge that number a little higher. And then, you know, whatever you feel is appropriate, and we will do our best to meet that target. So that's one possibility. The next item under consideration was to engage realtors or appraisers with a green designations training. And we said the target could be the number of participants, like maybe 40 participants, based roughly on how many we were able to get to participate last time. One of the thoughts behind that is, if you feel like we're doing really well with growing the HERS program and don't necessarily need to set a target because it's going so well, it might make sense instead to set a target to train some more realtors in the significance of the HERS rating and other green designations so that they can continue promoting it now that we know we're getting so many houses that are participating in the program. So that would be the consideration there. Or we could say, this is going so well for new construction. What we really want to do for this one next year is put some effort and energy into setting up a program for remodelers similar to the HERS program. And that, of course, would probably be based on the PEARL rating system, which we had talked to you about. And I think I will just say, I think any of these are really solid choices. It's really up to you all which direction you want us to go in. Would you like to pause here and pick the buildings one first and then move on to the transportation items, or do you want to hear the transportation items and debate them both together?
Sarah, for clarification, are we picking one target?
We're picking one target for each item.
Okay. Great.
And the vision, just as a reminder, because I know this has been a long process, is next year we won't reprioritize again. We don't envision doing that every year, but every few years. Instead, what we would do is next year, we would take a look at where we are at on the target we choose, and we would determine if we want to set a new target for next year or if we want to continue that target. So each year going forward, the Climate Action Commission would be setting a target for each section of the Climate Action Plan, except for waste, which we would carry from, because as you know from Jane's presentation at the beginning of the year, our resource management staff does this process themselves for all of their items. So we would just bring in one of their targets and use it so that we could get a report out on that. Do you want to talk about buildings first or buildings and transportation together?
What's different about the discussion if we do them together? I don't understand what that means.
I don't know. I think it's up to you whether if you would like to just pick one now and or if you want, if maybe you think by talking about them together, you could say, well, this combination really works for me rather than already being locked into buildings.
I'm okay just talking about this one. I mean,
okay.
Personally.
All right. Well, I'll let you guys take the floor then.
Okay, so we're talking about the buildings right now, and we're going to make a decision about which of the actions.
Which target you would like to set actions. For buildings. Yeah.
Yep. That's good.
I have a quick question about that. So you guys are really close to achieving 36% for HERS ratings.
Mm-hmm.
What's the mechanism by which that has been done? Because when I look at Engage Realtors and Appraisers, I could see that as a way of achieving, you know, 40% or higher, you know.
The current mechanism is we have a small grant program where we incentivize any builder who achieves a HERS score of 52 or better. We give them an $1,800 grant. HERS rating costs about $600 to get, so we're tripling their investment in that back to them. And what that's doing is simultaneously incentivizing getting a HERS rating. We've had some builders who've gotten HERS ratings and haven't gotten it to a 52, but in the process have learned what they need to do to get to a 52 and then have come back and successfully applied with other properties they build. And then we have one. Actually, I have to say, we have a local builder. I just put in the check request today for properties 11 and 12 this year that they've gotten them on. So they have really taken this mission to heart, and like it feels like every property they're building has been getting this rating. And the significance, just again, of a 52 is that it means it's 20% more energy efficient on average than what we would see if it was just built to current Iowa code.
Wow.
So number one kind of is more influence on the builders. Mm-hmm. Number two is more influence on the realtors.
Right. And our long-term objective with this is that home buyers would understand the HERS rating, that realtors would be using it to say, oh, this is going to tell you what you might spend annually on energy if you live in this home. And in effect, our hope is that long-term we're creating a market incentive, right?
This is Shetty. I have a clarification question on the quantity of 40% being the percentage of 52 or above HERS ratings, or Anybody, any of hers rating?
I think we could do that either way, depending on if you would like to see 40% of all buildings getting built in Iowa City getting a HERS rating. We can go that way. If you'd like 40% to get a 52 or better, it would effectively be 40% of homes being built getting the grant. We can make that the objective. I will say it's probably a very slight difference between the two. I think most builders at this point understand the program and are not going to submit for a HERS rating unless they think they're going to qualify for the grant. So it's probably same, but we can word it however you would like.
Krylov, I have a question about whether there's momentum already in the both the realtor community and in the builder community, and is there a way of tracking how much is impetus from the city and how much there is momentum that is now building on itself? Because for obvious reasons, if it doesn't need to be a priority from the city, then we can shift our attention to something else.
I would say there's very strong momentum with the building community. I think the Home Builders Association has been a great partner for us with it. That being said, it is only the second year of the program. And so I think we do want to continue to be providing support for it. In terms of how much of that is currently momentum that's being done by the city's efforts versus outside, I would say probably no one would be getting HERS ratings if we weren't incentivizing it at the moment. Long term, we hope that that will not be the case, but right now I think it very much is. In terms of realtors, we do still have a good relationship with the Iowa City Area Association of Realtors. And you might recall the HERS program grew out of those efforts initially. It has been several years since we have partnered with them on a training. And so I think there are realtors who are very enthusiastic about it, but who may not yet be encountering HERS rated homes. There are other realtors who did not receive the training who would have an interest in it. I think there probably is some more momentum we could be building with the realtor community. Is that?
Yeah, okay. That's great. If we're, as long as we're tracking some kind of that momentum, the handoff, you know, because I think resources are limited, right, in terms of what we can do.
I have a quick question. So the grant program is for builders specifically. Is there another mechanism for remodeling or, for existing structures beyond making realtors and so on aware? Like, what would that look like, I guess? Because it sounds like the incentive, like, oh, we're going to pay you. We're going to give you money to do this. That's a pretty strong motivator. If we're just educating people about the importance of it. Well, you have a remodel project, you know, it's important. They might buy into it, but unless they have that boost that you were giving to the builders. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. There is a parallel mechanism. The HERS program is a rating that's given by an independent energy rater. There is a parallel program called PEARL. We know less about it just because we haven't interacted with it as much. Like, I know a lot about HERS right now. But in a just a lucky stroke, the trainer who came and did the initial training for our realtors on all of these things, on green features in homes and, like, it started the conversation about HERS, has recently taken a position with the PEARL organization and has reached out to have a conversation about helping us just understand that program better. So I think we have some established relationships there that could be very useful in standing up a PEARL program. We also went and gave a presentation to the Area Remodelers Association last year, and there seemed to be real interest among them to figure out what such a program might look like. In terms of how we might incentivize it, I think we have to understand the program a little better, but because it does follow a different route than hers does. Hers, you have to contract with an energy raider to come out. For Pearl, it looks like the realtor begins by self-reporting, or the remodeler self-reports on upgrades that have been made to the building. And I think one of the things we need to do is figure out, are we going to do this for every home that gets remodeled? That may be a little out of reach for us. But if there are specific energy systems that we really want to support through a program like this, we might say, if you put in a heat pump, we'll pay for the Pearl rating so that the realtor and the homeowner have a tool with which to explain to the next prospective buyer what the value of that system is, or if you put on solar panels or some combination. We would probably begin by having a conversation with this contact with the Pearl organization about what kinds of things go into a Pearl rating, and then figure out how we're going to incentivize it and what the target would be. Much like with hers, you know, we had to figure out, like, well, what's the score we should aim for, right? For Pearl, it may be a specific score we aim for, or it may be just a building system, and we say we'll cover that cost. So there are more questions, I would say, with that particular target, like more unknowns, but some meaningful opportunities there. And that's one of the reasons we suggested it as a potential target. So as you can see, nice possibilities with any of these. That's why we're so glad we have you to make the hard decision.
So we can't do both, right?
It sounds like that would maybe be a separate item then, or?
Yeah, I would say just recognizing staff capacity and the fact that we're going to have a target for each of these sections. Really, we probably should pick one to focus on. That doesn't mean, like, if you pick the Pearl rating, that doesn't mean we're going to abandon the HERS incentives. It just means we'll just continue as we have been, rather trying to up our efforts.
It sounds like one
but
is...
I think the Pearl is, like, number three on on the list here, right? Or something similar to Pearl, but probably Pearl.
Oh, I see.
Right.
Yeah. I probably could have put Pearl in parentheses on that one and made it easier on you all.
Well, and this is Harrelson. Just to share my thinking, I really like the idea of Pearl because so many of our homes are already existing. A lot of our market is that. And when folks do work to improve efficiency, we want to reward that. And giving a sort of metric, a way to, like, let the market show, hey, this one has had some work done to it, I think could be really valuable. And then, like, rather than putting effort into training realtors now and then later putting effort into developing a program for the remodels and then having to retrain again, my thought would be to focus on a Pearl first and then train realtors on both systems again later.
Mm-hmm. I think that makes sense.
That makes sense to me.
I agree. Would that remodeling program also work for apartment buildings?
Possibly. I think that's something we can find out. We can include that as part of our research.
Yeah, this is Smith. I was also curious when you were talking about, you know, have a builder who it's the 11th or 12th build. Do you know what kind of build? Are they single family homes? Are they apartment complexes? Are they affordable housing? Is there any way that you can give more details on what kind of building is happening?
Oh, sure. We can actually, if you'd like, we can produce a report at the end of this year. I can have Danny type something up for you. But we have been tracking a lot of data on the HERS program. It is open to single-family homes, duplexes, and townhomes. It does not necessarily apply to apartment buildings at the moment. We predominantly have had single-family homes participate in it, but we have had a number of townhomes participate as well. And townhomes effectively are what is affordable housing in Iowa City at this point. We've had a range of price points, and I've got all of this data. I could pardon me, can bring you that shows we've tracked what's the lowest priced home, the highest priced home that's gotten it, where the median falls. I can tell you roughly right now, the median home getting a HERS score is about $500,000, which is about the median price of a new construction home in Iowa City at the moment. But we have had homes that sold for a lower price and a higher price on that. We also have been tracking the estimated energy saved, and I've been building out this spreadsheet myself. We've been estimating or tracking how much the city has spent on the program and how much the return is. And I can say right now, roughly for every dollar the city has spent, the homeowners who get those homes will realize a dollar and a half of savings per year. So it doesn't sound like a huge margin in year one, but when you consider that year over year over year, you know, 10 years from now, that's a huge return on the investment we've made. So that's very exciting. But also these HERS reports come with a lot of detail about the homes, and we just never are privy to the kind of detail that we're getting out of those reports. So there's lots of interesting things we can do with that data. And I will say, first and foremost, you know, the most important thing about it is building more efficient energy stock for the city. But much like our discussion with the EV chargers, a secondary benefit of this program is we've gotten just an incredible treasure trove of data to be able to work with on new homes, you know, understanding how they're being built and what's going in, what is making them efficient, like what seems to be the most cost-effective things builders are identifying to get to those scores that can help us inform future programming for years. So it's been a really great program. Would you be interested in a more detailed report on that?
Yeah.
All right. So I'll add that to the action items. We probably won't do it in December. We'll look to early next year, but we'll generate a more comprehensive HERS program report for you.
One little question. Pre-Love again. There are these rules about what kind of investment in your house will bring what kind of a return when you sell it.
Mm-hmm.
So like they say a kitchen, blah, 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 blah. And I'm just wondering how an investment in this compares to other investments in terms of resale. Is there any information about that?
I'm sure there is. I can say anecdotally, as we've been spending a few years developing this program, one of the things we've consistently heard from builders is a feeling that energy efficiency doesn't sell. And that's why one of the reasons why they don't prioritize it the way they do others. Like the thing we hear over and over is, you know, what people want is curb appeal and a granite countertop. And that's what you're up against versus energy systems. So one of the values of this program is making those energy systems visible and valued by the homeowners. I mean, that's the hope. Are we competing with granite countertops? I don't know. But certainly, I think in just raising the profile of these systems, the program's been helpful.
Yeah, having the score allows you to value it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm curious what thoughts are of, like, if we shift to, like, let's focus on Pearl and building that program, you know, what would we potentially miss by not prioritizing maybe the HERS rating now? And if there's momentum now and builders participating, you know, maybe we continue that momentum and then plan for FY 27, well, not 27, whatever it looks like, calendar year 27, for, you know, maybe exploring Pearl more. I don't know. I'd be curious what thoughts are on that too.
I will say, just as a point of clarification, we do not intend to discontinue the HERS program. Even if you choose Pearl, we will continue the HERS program as is. We just might not put a lot of energy in being like, how do we get to 50% or what have you? You know, we would say what we've got going now is working, so we're going to keep doing that. We're going to keep our partnership for the Parade of Homes and all the things that we've done to raise its profile. But we're also going to initiate this conversation about the Pearl program and start thinking about what that program might look like. And I will say, full disclosure, or just so you have, so we understand what the expectations are, it took us a good year to put the HERS program together and to set it up for the success it has. I anticipate we would spend this year designing the program, and then to meet this target, we would present you our proposal for it by the end of next year, and then probably look to implement in 2027.
Good to know.
Mm-hmm. Are these two programs, do they each have different eligibility requirements for whom do they serve? I guess the question. I'm sorry, I'm not familiar with the Pearl program at all, because I haven't been on this commission.
Yeah,
I have the background that many of you do have.
No worries. The HERS program applies to new construction, and the Pearl program applies to existing construction. So to Zach's point, one of the reasons I think to consider a Pearl program is we will always have more existing homes than new homes in any given year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
And isn't that an equity issue too?
One could argue that it is. We were talking about affordable housing pricing. Like, truly the most affordable housing in Iowa City is existing housing stock.
And I wonder if current homeowners would be more motivated because they're already living in the home, they know what their bills are, and so as they're making these upgrades, are those the more motivated people to be paying incentivizing these energy efficiency improvements more, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. Your granite countertops, the newness has worn off at that point. Right. Yeah.
But if you're weighing it against a bathroom remodel, right?
Well, you could do the bathroom remodel in a particular way.
Sure.
And this helps you. It's also an educational tool, right, to know how to do those remodels in the right way, maybe. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
Oh, no, absolutely. You know, one of the other things is to think about if someone wanted to add solar panels, for example. You know, we have had a solar group buy in the past, which also yielded great data. In fact, this realtor educator that we've worked with, when I sent her the data, she was like, I can't believe you have this data. She was like, I was going to try to commission a study with researchers for the Association of Realtors, the National Association of Realtors. And she's like, and Iowa City has it. But one of the things we tracked in that program was the reasons why people did not choose to get solar after going through the education. And fascinating study. I actually have a graph that I could bring in sometime to show you. The biggest reasons were financial, but we actually parsed it down between whether it just was not affordable at the time after they looked into it, or whether they could afford it but chose not to get it because they didn't think it would have an adequate payback period for them. And most of the people who chose not to get solar fell into that category. They had the money, they could have bought it, but they chose to prioritize other purchases in part because they didn't think they'd be in the home long enough to recoup the investment. So if you had something like a Pearl rating that could convey to the next homeowner, here's the value of the investment that I have made, you know, to your benefit, that might be an additional motivator.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I have a comment about this, Krylov again. We wanted to see it a different way, the solar, thinking more in terms of resilience than in terms of energy saving. So in other words, the question I tried to pose to a provider, to a vendor, is what can you do for $5,000 that would allow us to run our refrigerator and a couple of other appliances? So that's top. No one could not get an answer because the psychology is about 25-year payback for a $20,000 system, whereas an approach that looked at resilience for your freezer and your furnace could could build a modular approach, because this is top down now. Could that be a thing?
Solar for resilience? Certainly, it can be. I mean, in my experience, part of the discussion there is about whether you have a grid-tied solar system or not. Because if you put solar on your rooftop, regardless of how big it is or the price you pay for it, if it is connected to the grid, which almost all solar installations are, when the power goes out, it's going to turn off.
Unless you have a battery, right?
Unless you have a battery. Right. And the battery you would need is going to be more than $5,000.
Well, I'm just giving an example of the order of thinking, order of brain operations here.
This is a bit of an aside, but on this point, this is probably a good moment to announce that we got some very good news 2 weeks ago that we successfully applied for a grant to obtain two mobile solar generators that we'll be using in the city. We'll have one up at our transit hub, and the other will be an educational tool that we will send to different sites, the first of which is going to be the student build program. We're going to send it out there so they can run their power tools off of this battery system that will have, it'll be enclosed in a solar array that won't, the solar panels you would need to keep the battery running constantly are so much bigger than what you can put on a trailer. But what it'll do is slow down the drawdown of the battery, sort of like a hybrid vehicle. You know, the battery slows down the usage of gas. In this case, the solar panels will slow down the usage of the battery, and we'll also be sending it to like our resilience hub partners. We also put into the grant to buy some cell phone charging cabinets that we'll be able to attach to it. So in an emergency like the derecho, we might be able, for example, to send it to a resilience hub and have people come and be able to plug in their cell phones and recharge them. So we're very excited about this grant. And then the other good news, is as we were talking about the student build program, you know, as we'd been going through the buildings items and talking about those priorities, and I was like, I don't know when we'll ever be able to do a net zero public housing project. Like, that just seems like really far in the future. The student build project this year is going to be a net zero home. They were building it to be net zero ready, and they found solar panels that they're able to use. And so I hopped on it and said, we will happily find a way to help fund hooking up those solar panels so that you can get to a net zero status. So we're going to be able to check that box that, you know, 6 months ago was a mystery. So good news all around. Happy November.
Congrats.
Very cool.
It sounds to me like we're coalescing around the Pearl rating as the target. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So then we'll move on to transportation. And I want to be mindful of Kendall's time. I promised that she would not go into overtime on her very first day on the job. So she'll be exiting at 5 o'clock. All right. So for transportation then, I did basically the similar process where I looked at the top scoring item, which was implement recommendations from the completed electric vehicle readiness plan. And thought about what kinds of metrics what kinds of targets we could realistically set for next year, and brought you three possibilities. One would be to expand public EV charging outside of the downtown ramps, which, of course, we have discussed in several meetings now. One reason I put this on here, just thinking about what's realistic and what's timely, we do anticipate that the state is going to release the final round of Volkswagen settlement funding this year. And so we have a possibility of applying for some grant funding to help with this project. We feel like we would have a reasonable opportunity for success in obtaining that. So there may be some funding to support this target if we go after it. The other reason it might be a timely item is because we collaborated closely with the airport on putting up their solar array, I went and actually spoke with the airport commission 2 months ago, and talked about what are other kinds of collaborations we could have with the airport on the climate action front. And they were very enthusiastic about the idea of putting an EV charger at the airport, which is an area we have not explored before. So I think there's some good support from their commission to complement the work you all are doing that might feed into this target. So that's the first one. The second one, in recognition of the conversations that you all had brought forward about the importance of working with area employers for workplace charging, we could set a target of trying to engage a area employer with a grant to put in a charging station for use by their employees. I will be very transparent and say I don't know what our chances of getting someone interested in it might be, but you don't know until you try. Mm-hmm. And I can think of the mechanism we would use. We would basically just try to effectively open our current grant that's available for multifamily housing up to area employers, and we would try to work with our economic development staff member to see if we couldn't identify some employers who might be more interested than others to go out and do some one-on-one engagement, which don't tell Kendall, she may be the one who has to do that. So that's a possibility for that item. And then the third one is, as you know, for many years running now, we've been hosting an EV car show as part of Climate Fest. One of the things we hear from attendees at that is how much they would really like to have a group for EV drivers in the area. And there would be, I think, an advantage to the city initiating that group, like putting some structures in place to build basically a bench of EV ambassadors. So on the one hand, we would be doing a service to the EV drivers by creating a forum where they can connect and share stories, you know, information about like who's servicing EVs really well, things like that, that might help create support for EV drivers in the community. At the same time, it would give us an opportunity to identify folks who, when we're putting in charging stations at workplaces or we're putting in charging stations at apartments, would be willing to bring their EV and talk to residents or talk to the employees at a luncheon learn about, here's what I enjoy about my EV, here's why you might want one, so that the landlords and employers know that if they put in this charging station, we're also going to be bringing some wraparound support to help them realize the value of that investment, right? And these EV drivers could do things that we can't currently do, like offer to let someone get in their EV and get a ride around town to get a feel for it. So there'd be some very valuable, I think, engagement opportunities if we did that. There also is the same organization that supports our EV car shows at Climate Fest each year also supports them for Earth Day. And we have never had an Earth Month EV car show. If we had an EV group like this, we might be able to gauge whether it would make sense to try to offer something two times a year, and we would have sort of a ready-made structure to recruit people to come, you know, for that event, sort of the way we have around Climate Fest. It would just, I think, give us added impetus to explore that possibility, or maybe even explore the possibility of partnering with an existing car show for, like, I don't know, hot rods, and see if they'd be interested in having some EV interlopers show up. So many interesting things there. That one, again, would probably be a research and design, though I do think because we've had such a long-term relationship now with some of the EV owners who come to the EV car show, we probably could reasonably research, design it, and deploy it in the coming year. This is where you all get to discuss these possibilities and decide which one you want.
Well, this is Smith. I was curious if you've brainstormed what employers you might be thinking about reaching out to or partnering with, and thinking about one of our number one employers in Eastern Iowa would be the university, and what your thoughts are on whether that would be a fruitful conversation or where you think it would go with, I guess, as they're building new parking ramps. I mean, they're doing that is having a conversation going to increase it from what they're already doing, or what you're...
I think we might look to you for a little direction on that. I will say at first blush, I myself would be a little hesitant to partner with the university only because they are already putting in EV charging, and also because they are a state institution, which has their own funds for things like that, but also as a state institution may be subject to some shifting directives there. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that we can't have the conversation. Brenda, you, as our university representative, are taking a strategic drink so as not to answer this question. Would you be able to share much?
Okay. I really don't know much about it. I do know that they are putting EV stations in a lot of the new ramps.
Yep.
I don't know how we would negotiate a partnership. I don't know how we would do that moving forward. Mm-hmm. But I could certainly investigate.
So I called parking one day to ask about that, if that was something that they were planning on doing in more parking lots around the university. And probably I wasn't talking to the right person, but the person who I was talking to said, well, we don't put gas stations in, so why would we put EV parking in? You know, charging in. And I was just like, okay, I'm not talking to the right person, whatever. So my feeling after that conversation is that I don't, like, I haven't had the best interactions with parking in general. And so I don't know how open people are in that area, but maybe once you get to a certain level, it would be a different kind of conversation. But I don't know. I don't have a lot of confidence.
What I would say is, if you want to pick this item, what we would probably do is pick it and then figure out if you are interested in us exploring a partnership with the university. We could ask Brenda to do some investigating about what's currently being done, and I could do some investigating about what is even allowable for the city, because I think the city does not send a lot of grants to the university, to be honest. And I don't know if that's a policy or just a practice, but I can find out. I'm really disheartened about your conversation. That's okay. We could also take a look at other area employers. What we would probably do is look at, like, some of the bigger employers, like Procter & Gamble.
Yeah.
We know, for example, they have many employees coming from Muscatine. And if they put in EV charging, that actually might be a meaningful incentive from employees coming from out of town. And as you know, we've discussed many times, we have 40,000 commuters who come into Iowa City every day from outside of Iowa City, and we have very little that we're able to do to incentivize their transportation choices. They do not get to participate in fare-free transit, for example. So partnering with someone like P&G might be an opportunity to do something for those out-of-town commuters. And what we would do, I think, if you pick this item, is try to bring you some other additional things to think through as we start poking around.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to interestingly say I'm more partial to 1 and 3, I think. I think 1 is interesting more because you think there's potential funding that you've identified already, too, and it seems decently shovel ready. I think 3 is interesting too, because of that, like, community connectedness piece of it. And I think it's hard to measure what that even looks like, and what might come out of it too. So it could be really interesting to see, what that ambassador group would look like and what would come of it. So I'm just going to say that's my thought.
This is Shetty, and I agree with that. I was wondering, what are the numbers for your meetups during Climate Fest for the EV showcase?
The numbers in terms of drivers or the... Okay. We, for the last several years, have been getting between about 16 and, like, I want to say 23 or 24 drivers. I'd have to go back and look at the numbers each year. It fluctuates a little. We get hundreds of people who walk through to talk to them. And to Jamie's point, one way of thinking about this is I feel like everything on this list is a good possibility for us in the coming years. So one thing you may think of this, instead of choosing one and abandoning the others, might be thinking about the sequencing. Like, we do this one this year, and then chances are really good you're going to see some of these ideas again next year when we go to have this discussion again. Like, and you can even say, let's do number X this year, but let's be sure to bring back number Y next year, and we will do that as we think about future targets.
This is Harrelson. On number one, what are the possibilities for DC fast charging, or is that probably a bridge too far?
DC fast charging might be difficult for us. We'll see what the grant opportunity is under the Volkswagen settlement funds. The two things I would offer on DC fast charging to think about is, level two charging, you can put in a level two charger, a really nice level two charger for about $10,000. And what I mean by really nice is like it has all the software that helps us collect the tax that we have to pay to the state and gives us all the data. You can do it even more cheaply if you don't want that software. But for our public charging, we tend to. DC fast charging, you're looking at paying more like somewhere between $50,000 and $80,000 for the unit. And you're probably also going to be needing to do some sort of infrastructure upgrade to support it at the transformer or, God forbid, substation level. Wim could speak to that.
Depends where you go.
Yeah, as a system designer.
Substation.
And we would definitely work with the utility on determining that. I don't think we have it in our budget currently this year for DC fast charging. We could look at it. But the other thing to think about with DC fast charging is that kind of charging, you find it most often along the interstate because it's people who are passing through, need to get a rapid charge and get mm-hmm. back on the road again. There is an argument to be made that level two charging is more likely to serve local residents and nearby residents and also drive some economic development activity because those people who are charging are often doing other things in the city while they're doing it. Whereas DC fast charging along the interstate, you don't see as many people coming in and doing other things within the city. So there's not as strong of an economic motivator and is more likely to be serving people who are not from the community, if that makes sense. But if you all say DC fast charging is what we really want, then we will do everything we can to like find a way.
DC fast charging would cost a lot more.
Yes, it would.
So then you would put it near the freeway off ramps and pay for it faster.
Oh, you mean like we would charge for it to recoup the costs?
Yeah.
I don't think we would recoup the costs any faster. I think it's really hard to recoup those costs. But yeah, I think that's one where the economic argument is much stronger in the private sphere than it is in the public sphere for that reason.
Are the quantities for actions one and two set in stone? Like, is that what's budgeted for? Or
no. You can say you would like more. I would say for number two, it's not set in stone, but it's probably realistic that our first year out, we tend to get one or two if we're really lucky and really energetic in going after them, participants. So I think for number two, one's realistic. For number one, I tried to guess what a realistic number is. We could set it higher. Part of my thinking there is if we say three charging stations, that's one at the airport and then two parks, which feels like a kind of reasonable growth opportunity. But I guess we do want to be budget aware, but we could do more than that if you feel strongly. Also, we could adjust that up depending on the grant funding we get. So a bit of a wild card there.
Okay. So for number two, that would be partnering with one employer?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
We could also word number one if you wanted to be a minimum of three. And then if the opportunity arises to do more than that, you know, if you don't want to set a solid target, but other than to say we want at least three, but if there's opportunity to do more, let's do more. We can do it that way as well.
Yeah, I'm just wanted to share my thinking about it really quick. Yeah, I think number three personally for me just is jumping out more, installing, you know, the chargers in different locations. I mean, that's, you know, there's a benefit to that, but I think there's also a great benefit to, yeah, creating a community of people who, can, you know, share their thoughts about this and maybe expand that group larger. So much of what sustainability is an idea is just like getting people to buy into it, I feel like, and any opportunity we can invest, not just in the infrastructure, but the people who can help us spread that idea, I think is a good one and probably like pretty cost effective. I imagine it's going to be cheaper, I imagine, than installing the chargers themselves. So that's just a thought.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, you know, let's say these Volkswagen settlement funds come about though. I mean, would you still, let's say we chose three, would there still be appetite to do public EV charging? Can we do both?
Oh, now you're sorry. Calling my bluff.
I'm just saying.
We probably will pursue grant funding if it becomes available. I would say, given that the reason to choose number one might be, and we experienced this within this own group in the last year, right? Like, it seems like always when we put out for, to put in more charging, we get some pushback about it. Like, should the city be investing in this? Does this make sense? And so having the commission say, yes, we want this to be a priority for this year, would help us clear that hurdle early on. And also, is something we could put in the grant application to say the Climate Action Commission has identified a goal of increasing public charging in parks and at the airport this year. And I think that will increase our likelihood of getting the grant funding, basically. We will probably still go after it, even if you don't choose it. I would like the help. we could also kind of do, because number three is kind of a soft launch, if you're feeling really torn between these two, you could say, let's go after number one and let's begin the research for number three. And then when we come back to you next year to look at what the targets could be, the target could be like, we're going to set up this program and we're going to get X number of members, right? Or we could look at, what I would probably do is wait until we have Climate Fest this year and do a lot of outreach with the drivers who come to Climate Fest, which is really at the end of the year, and say, hey, we're looking at starting this program next year, and start recruiting there. And then we could come back to you and say, here's how those conversations went. What kind of target do you want to attach to the membership as we move forward? So that would be a possibility.
I support that.
I kind of like that idea, yeah.
What would a program for number three look like, though? I'm kind of just envisioning a Facebook group or something.
Facebook probably would be involved. but there's all kinds of things. I mean, we could really explore a lot of possibilities. One thing we would probably do is reach out and look at what other EV existing groups do. But we could do a newsletter that we send out for our area EV drivers, where we have a featured EV driver each month. We can create an online forum for them. We could have meetups where we go out and get, you know, like we could partner with Big Grove to have an event there and, you know, see if they'd be in. I don't want to combine like free drink tokens and driving. I think our legal office might have some things to say about that. But we could look for a fun location for drivers to come and, you know, chat together and show off their cars, or, you know, just hang out together. There are lots of forms that could take, and we could be doing some thinking this year as to what that looks like.
Yeah. If there's some new EV chargers installed at some parks or the airport, that might be a good.
Yeah, they could roll out there. They could be part of the ribbon cutting, which would be fun.
EV tailgating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I mean, we've got to apply for the grant funds. Like, we don't know when the grants are going to come out. We know it's sometime this year, right? We've got to apply for them, get them awarded, get the contract executed. It could be that we just secure funding for this year, which would allow us to grow both of them simultaneously. We would just keep you updated on that.
Seeing a lot of head nods, yeah.
Well, I know as Smith, I think a lot about shaping behavior, and I do really like that number three proposal about, like, when you see your neighbors and then you're connecting the community part of it, just role modeling, and when you know someone who has an EV and the more you grow that group, it does seem like that helps shape behavior, too. So I, if I had a vote between, I'd probably choose three, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to throw in too, just part of my thinking was having a group like that could be kind of the permission structure that you were kind of looking for. Maybe instead of us, it's this group that you could go, well, I don't know, guys, we have this whole like organic grassroots EV community group that's like demanding EV chargers or something. But that might be more like down the line or something. And yeah, obviously we can't like, that's just my imagination running wild, I guess. So anyway.
I like it. Let's live in that world. What I'm hearing, it sounds like maybe this is, do correct me if this is wishful thinking. It sounds like number one, let's do that this year and start doing the legwork for number three and come back to you with some of the program design by the end of the year for number three, you know, so that we can think about setting a target for it potentially next year. Does that sound right? I mean, realistically, we probably were going to dabble in both of these as well. So
I think that sounds good.
I think that sounds good. Yeah.
Okay.
And then once the group gets going, then the employers, then they can solicit the employers to get involved.
It all works together.
We're an employer.
You know, and the other nice thing too, I'll say, is we haven't talked about it a lot, but we are in a very budget constrained year this coming year. And so expanding our grant program for EV charging stations, we did recently up the limit to $10,000 from $5,000, which is a bit of a stretch for us, but we are committed to trying to get to a true 50-50 cost share with people who put them in. So adding employers to that pot would have meant probably drawing down our budget for something else in the coming year. So I think leaving that for maybe 27 or 28 does make some financial sense. I try not often to bring these things like financial considerations to you because I want you to be able to pick things that are the priority and let us try to build a budget around it. But I think there's some beneficial sequencing there.
Krylov, I would like to speak for the non-EV world and say that it doesn't have to be EV or nothing. And that would manifest for me in a discussion about what can be done in the non-EV world. My one idea I have is a card, and the card shows at this speed, this is how much carbon, and this is how much money. And on the other side is all the Hawkeye football games and home games. Something that just pushes against the rural, you know, the environment that says that if you are driving under 75 miles an hour, you're holding up traffic. So I just want to put a pin in that discussion because it might be out of the purview, but there, if you're saying 40% of the people commute who come here, there are people who can be touched. Mm-hmm. It'll save lives, save gas, save carbon, and it's a thing. Mm-hmm. Rather than the most, you know, the tip of the spear is EVs, and there's a whole pyramid behind that. So I don't, you know, we're running out of time, so I just want to request that that gets on the agenda at some point.
Yeah, well, thank you for that wonderful reminder. And I'll use that as an opportunity to say, we're setting this target because it was the top priority item. That does not mean we're going to abandon our other efforts. You know, as you remember, when we were scoring things, the scores were, you know, grow efforts in this area. So this is, we're looking at a way to grow our efforts around EVs. But the other tiers were, you know, maintain current efforts. And so we will continue to maintain the work that we're doing for bikes and pedestrians. We had a really successful engagement event around the bike count that the MPO is very interested in continuing in future years. So that's been wonderful. We'll be, still be doing our bike breakfast in May. We're looking at sidewalk development as part of a comprehensive plan. So we are thinking broadly about that and thinking about commuters as well. So none of it will be abandoned. This is just the way we're going to grow this one particular effort. And that's true for any of these. So how much? Oh, my gosh, no time at all.
Where are we going to meet?
Oh, yes.
Is somebody going to tell me? I saw it on the agenda last week. Yeah. Is it what?
If it works for you, in your agenda packet, we included adaptation for this month. I don't think we're going to have time to run through all of those items. I will make just a note on one of them, and that is on APP3, expanding public tree planting. I have a little additional information to add on 2025. I had reached out to Tyler, our staff forester, to get information. I didn't quite get it back in time to include it in the packet, but I did get it for today. So on 2025, if you want to also note that the city staff planted a total of 587 trees this year and hosted 5 volunteer tree planting events. The larger scale plantings were completed in the neighborhood surrounding Windmill Place and the northeast side of town, as well as the neighborhoods north and south of Fair Meadows Park, which is in the South District. So a lot of tree plantings in public areas and along right-of-ways in the south and northeast portions of the city. We did have a $30,000 federal grant under the IRA that would have supported the planting of 168 more trees. That unfortunately was put on hold. We don't know the status of that grant, but our staff have a goal of planting 750 trees each year. Mm-hmm. The reason we did not meet it this year is because of that hiccup in the grant funding, but we did get 587 in. If you would like to, for the next meeting, why don't we come back to adaptation and we'll, I'll give you the updates on all of them the way we have in the past, but you can begin thinking about preliminary scoring. We'll try to do, if it works for you, the original plan was we were going to bring sustainable lifestyle items to you next month. But clearly it has not worked for us to do 2 per session, and sustainable lifestyle has the lowest associated emissions reduction. So why don't we plan on rolling that into the January discussion, and we'll work on adaptation at our next meeting, in which we also have to elect our chair and vice chair. Okay, so we'll circle back on that one. And then to Nadia's point, last time we talked about the possibility of having future meetings in the city manager's conference room. Is that an acceptable change for everyone?
Yep.
Okay. We will show you where it is at the end of the meeting, Nadia. Do you want to do that beginning in December, or do you want to do it beginning in January? Do you want to make a clean start with the start of the year and finish out the year here, or do you want to move into our new digs next month and have a holiday housewarming?
Next month seems fine to me.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fine.
All right.
Is the main door where we get in out? And we went through here last time, but it's you go out and around or something.
Yeah, you'll go up into revenue. And what we'll do is we will have a climate action staff member, or actually a couple. We'll have Danny and Kendall down in the lobby to meet you when you get here and conduct you up to the room. Okay. And I'll just confirm it's available in December, and then I'll make a note of it when I send out, pardon me, the meeting invite. So then in actionable items, I just have the HERS program report, which we'll work on for probably, let's say, February, since we've still got sustainable lifestyle to do. Cool.
All right. Let's do, we have public comment? I just want to mention that, too. We have a couple minutes, but anyone here for public comment? Seeing no. Okay, sounds good. All right, then we will move to adjourn. So can I get a motion?
Shetty moves to adjourn.
All right.
Smith can second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Great.